I'd like to begin this morning with point number 17 in the outline I've been giving you, and that is three words, very emphatic words, very important words. Elders must rule. They must. This is their job, given them by God, and there is no doubt whatsoever about the command to do so. If you would look at Hebrews 13:7, 1 Timothy 3:5, 1 Timothy 5:17, all bear that out very clearly. This means that the church is not a democracy. It has never been, was never intended to be, and cannot operate as one. Jesus Christ is the absolute authority. What he says goes. No one questions, no one debates, no one disagrees. His word is absolute. He delegates authority to the elders. Their word is not absolute in the sense that his is. And I'll try, if I can, to make a distinction so that we can understand this. In the lesson that was read this morning from the New Testament, from Matthew 7, we have an example of a military man. And he says in Luke verse 8, I say to one, go, and he goes. To another, come, and he comes. In other words, when I make a command, he jumps. This is the idea. That, of course, is not the way an elder operates. He has the last word, but he doesn't command. He asks. He encourages. He leads. And in the process, we don't do any voting. We don't go by majority opinion. Those things have no place in the church. Now, if you were discussing something and you get a response from several brethren and you have no objection, you generally go ahead and do it, but that is not voting. That is not necessarily a majority opinion. You may simply have an acquiescence of some and an expression of favoritism to something by others, and this is perfectly all right. That's common procedure. But we must never descend to voting, to counting hands, to counting heads, and going with the majority. The church is not to be run that way. I'm unhappy to say that sometimes elders have been appointed that way and various things have been done that way, but that is absolutely wrong procedure. Now, when I say the elder has the last word, I mean he has the final decision. That's what a ruler does. Subjects do not question the king's decision. They may not always like it, but they abide by it. And in the church, when an elder has heard all comments, has looked at all the alternatives, has considered all the possibilities, he has the last word. And of that, there is no question. Now, he may get all the input from members he wishes, and many times his decisions will be, of course, dependent somewhat on the input he gets. Very likely will, many times. But he still has the last word. And point number 18, elders are not to let a few hurt feelings sway them in a right decision. Now, this is very important because we all get our feelings hurt at times. So what? We're not little babies. We can take it. We all survive hurt feelings. The Lord knows we're going to get our feelings hurt many times. He expects us to be big enough to overcome that. Some people talk about being offended. This has nothing to do with hurt feelings. Being offended is to stumble, to fall from the faith. That has nothing to do with hurt feelings. So if you get a little miffed, over a decision? Swallow it. Forget it. Because that is the nature of things in this life. And I get a little upset when I hear a preacher or anyone say, "Well, I didn't mean to hurt your feelings by what I said." We need to get stung once in a while, brethren. We need to get awakened once in a while. Remember that the Word of God is sharper than a two-edged sword. It cuts. And it doesn't hurt us to get a few wounds occasionally. It's good for us. Remember, the first thing the Lord does when He receives us is give us a good whipping. He chastens us. And He says if we don't take it like a young man or a young woman, then we're not even His child. We're illegitimate. So we can take a little licking occasionally. It's good for us at any age. It's good for us to be humbled a little, to learn to be a little more submissive, to swallow our pride, and swallow some of those words we might speak in protest. I'm going to hurry along to a totally different subject now. The obligation of the congregation to elders, because this is just as important a subject as the one I've just finished commenting on. And I'm so glad that Brother Tom said what he did this morning about murmuring, complaining, and muttering. Because the first point I want to address, and members, I want you to hear this and hear this clearly. Stop muttering, complaining about your elders. Quit it. God won't tolerate it. It's just as simple as that. And let me explain this just a little bit. Is it not true that the congregation suggested these men as elders? And is it not true that with that suggestion was your willingness to comply with their authority, to work under them and with them? Wasn't it your intention to cooperate? Wasn't all of that included when you either signified approval or didn't indicate any disapproval by your silence? And we're told in Philippians 2, verse 14, to do all things, and I think this means all things in the church, without murmuring or disputing. That's just simply the way it is. I wonder what would happen if you were like Miriam when you dispute the right of a person to command or lead and you suddenly become leprous. We have that account in Numbers chapter 12, beginning in verse 2. I suspect we would only complain once. God had remedies, you see, for things like this. Very quick fix-it remedies. He knew how to make impressions on people. And while He defers our punishment many times, nonetheless, our sins find us out many times in this life. And everyone we've committed, if it isn't forgiven, will find us out before the next. Now, if you have a criticism of substance, you've heard the expression, put up or shut up. And in a sense, we can apply this here. Because if you have a real complaint, and you are willing to make this complaint publicly and officially, there is a procedure to handle that. That is not a pleasant procedure, but it is a biblical procedure. 1 Timothy 5:19. But our griping and complaining and fault-finding doesn't come to that, does it, typically? We don't want to take a strong official stand because then we would have to put up. And if you can't put up, shut up. I think that's perhaps the plainest way to say it. It is not fair to expect more perfection from an elder than you're willing to strive for. Don't expect him to be an example when you're neglectful. That isn't fair. You try to measure up also. That is a much fairer arrangement. And just keep remembering that when people work as hard as they can, do their best, they really don't deserve much criticism. They deserve your support, your help. And people are chosen to be elders because they were probably more willing to spend and be spent than most of us are. Remember that, please. That they took a job that they fully understood was going to wring the energy out of them many times. How many of us would volunteer for the same? How many of us have expressed a desire to do the same? Just chew on those things, and I think perhaps we will be a little less likely to speak sometimes when we ought to be completely silent. Point number two, the congregation must recognize the authority that the elders are given by the Scriptures in this particular area that many people resent. They have the right to challenge or question my conduct here at home or in the community. And don't you forget it. How are they going to watch for my soul if they don't know what I'm doing? I've heard people say, well, they're just nosy. They just want to stick their nose in my business. Thank God they do, because that's their job. Your conduct is their primary concern. And therefore, if they seem to be nosy, if they seem to ask questions, thank God they are, because that's their job. What kind of a shepherd would ignore the sheep if they're straying? He would be classified as totally incompetent and be fired. You can't ignore things like this. He has to bring people up short sometimes. He has to talk to you. He has to remind you. He has to advise you. This is what it's all about. I wonder, do you trust your elders with good motives? Do you believe that when they approach you or talk to you, that they want what's best for you? I do. If a person has the best of intentions, don't resent their efforts to help you, because there is no way you can be hurt by this. Absolutely no way at all. Now, a shepherd and an elder is an under-shepherd, and you are the flock over which he presides. A shepherd under actual conditions prospers only if the sheep do well. If wool prices are good, if there is a good crop of strong, healthy lambs, if sheep losses have been few and older sheep are in good flesh, the shepherd will realize a good percentage of profits. And the very same thing is true in the church. If things are going well, then the work of an elder is always profitable. But what shepherd would literally almost be cutting his own throat if he ignores the sheep? If he just lets them wander off? If he pays no attention to the tangles they get in that catches wool and pulls part of it off? If he just totally ignores dangers, hazards, and other things that might affect his flock, what kind of a shepherd would that be? Would you hire him? I don't want him watching my sheep. I want him to be attentive. I want him to see those sheep. I want him to know what they're doing. We should want this from our elders. And if they have to tell me something for the good of my soul, I should thank him. Not gripe about it, not fuss about it, not complain about it, because that's for my benefit. So an elder is actually working against himself if he ignores the flock. For heaven's sake, don't hope you're going to be ignored, because you are directly working against your own best interests. I get so tired of complaints in the church, griping, fussing, fault-finding, backbiting. I hate to go into a house and hear other members dissected. I hate to go into someone's home and hear this little innuendos about this or that. I don't want to hear those things. I'm not interested in those things. Simply because if I listen, I encourage you. If you go into a household and somebody wants to gripe, ignore it, pay no attention, indicate that you don't want to hear it. And it'll stop right there. We don't have to listen to everything people want to tell us. Because of what they're telling us they shouldn't be telling us, we don't have to listen. And what I'm saying is then, don't pass along murmurs, complaints, gripes, and fault-finding that should never have been uttered in the first place. Don't be a party to such passing on. Because God doesn't like murmurers and complainers. Point number three. We are to expedite and assist in the ruling process. Now, those who govern are always happy if they have the consent of the governed. That's what is supposed to make a good democracy. So, if we submit to policies, directions that are established for the well-being of the congregation, then we smooth things out for everyone, ourselves and also for our leaders. Now, if we disagree with elders as to something that is pertinent to the welfare of the church, we're to be very careful how we do this. And what we do is not this. We don't go to a few houses and begin talking against him. That's not what we do. If we have a few people who are bothered, we go to the elder and we talk to him. That's how we handle this. We don't sneak around and try to provoke problems in the congregation. Now, I'm a very plain-spoken person, as you know. I try to see things as they are. I try to say things as they are. I hope you don't resent that, because there is absolutely no point in our lying to each other about anything. Speaking the truth not only includes a fair representation of God's Word, it means that anything we say, in anything we say, we are to speak the truth. And let's not hesitate to do that with each other. If we were more open and objective with one another, we wouldn't have many of the problems we have. If we weren't afraid to tell somebody the truth, sometimes our relationships would be much better. All right, let me hurry along. Now, Peter tells us in 1 Peter 5, verse 3, that the relationship between an elder and his flock is not master and servant. I don't think I need to say very much about that, because we've already talked about it to some extent. But let me give you a comparison that I think is very apt and that pretty almost accurately describes the relationship between the flock and the shepherd. It is very, very similar to that between senior and junior partners in a law firm. Very similar. For example, let me show you the similarities. Both are involved in building up and maintaining the firm. They both have loyalty to the firm. They both care what happens to the firm because what happens to the firm happens to them. So they have much at stake. Now, the senior member administers the firm. He tells the junior member what is decided and why. He asks the younger member for input and does that frequently if he is a good senior member. He'll consider any idea, but it is the senior member who supplies guidance and assistance to the younger. He will correct the younger when he makes mistakes. The younger respects the decision of the senior because of the senior member's age and experience, his knowledge of law, his expertise in dealing with people. He respects the senior's position also because he realizes that it was earned by hard work and sterling qualifications. And one thing is always stressed. While junior and senior partners perform different roles, occupy different chairs, they are a team, and the firm's success will depend on how well they work together. And that is very, very similar to the relationship between an elder and his flock. Elders and other members are enjoined in a venture in which neither can be successful without the other. It is absolutely necessary, then, that the congregation cooperate fully and support the elders as fully as necessary. That is an absolute essential. Point number four. The congregation must be aware of the elders' work on their behalf. In other words, they must have an idea of what he's doing. Notice this command in 1 Thessalonians 5:12 and verse 13 stresses that. We urge you, brethren, to recognize those who labor among you and are over you in the Lord and admonish you and to esteem them very highly in love for their work's sake. If you don't know what their works are, how can you esteem them? How can you evaluate their effectiveness if you don't know what they're doing? Now, many church members have said, well, I don't see what the elders are doing. There perhaps is a reason for that. When Paul was standing making his explanation to King Agrippa, he said, among other things, Acts 26, verse 26, that the acts of Jesus were not performed in a corner. In other words, they were not done in private. They were done publicly where everyone could see. That isn't necessarily true with many of the things that an elder does. Remember that Jesus also said that we are not to do our works to be seen by men. Matthew 23:5. That was said in recognition of the hypocrisy of the scribes and Pharisees. So an elder is not to be a displayer of his deeds. He isn't to tell people what he does in an effort to get them to admire him, because the Lord will not smile on that. But if you read Matthew 6, 1 through 4, you will discover that charitable things are to be performed in private. And God who sees that privately will reward openly, is the promise. Of necessity, many things that an elder does are private. Most of his dealings with individuals then will not necessarily be widely known. And many of those he would not discuss. The people who will make those known are the people to whom he has talked, with whom he has dealt. Those are the people who will make it known. So the works of an elder come to you more or less secondhand. They don't come necessarily in explanation all of the time from him. They will come from other people. In this way, we become aware of many of the things that an elder does of a private nature. And that, of course, is perfectly all right. Second-hand information is very good if it's truthful. And let me caution you here. When you are reporting a conversation between yourself and an elder, when you are explaining, perhaps, a discussion you had, don't color that so that he comes out poorly and you come out like a hero. Because that's generally inaccurate and it's a lie. Also, don't report it in a bid for sympathy because you got scolded, if that was the nature of the discussion. Don't go around like a little whipped puppy expecting people to pat you on the head and console you because you got what was coming to you. So the private things filter down accurately, honestly, we hope. Point number five, congregational members should make of themselves willing workers in carrying out projects that are planned and suggested and led by elders. They should be happy to help. What can I do to help should be the response, not, well, I guess I could. Well, maybe I can work it out. Maybe I'll find time. Well, I might be there. No, it's, what can I do to help? This is the attitude that we should have, because when we help, we're helping the whole congregation. We're not just helping one or two, we're helping everyone. We're a unit, and whatever helps one should help all. This is just the nature of things. And since the elder cannot do all the work himself, he has to call on the members for assistance. It is a great blessing if when he calls on them, they're willing. I think this is perhaps a great buoyance to his spirits. I think this will lift rather than deflate. And it isn't wrong for an elder to feel good also. Now, elders cannot do all the visiting that needs to be done in the congregation. They can't see to all the sick people. They can't check on all the people in nursing homes personally. They don't have time. So if you have some time and they ask you to do some visiting, do it gladly. Because it is the good works, remember, that represents the snow-white garment of saints who will be at that wedding feast in heaven. Those garments represent the righteous acts of saints. Don't refuse to do a good thing. Accumulate all the good works you can. That's the treasure you lay up in heaven. If a weak brother or sister needs assistance, and you live close to that person, you are in an excellent position to render it. So please do it. Do it gladly, happily, because it is more blessed to give than to receive, and I believe the greatest pleasure we have in life comes from serving others. Remember in Ephesians 4, verses 11 through 16, where we have a discussion of the things necessary for equipping the saints for the work of the ministry and the edifying of the body of Christ. This is one of the reasons that elders were placed in that position that they have in the church, because they have a vital job to do in equipping the saints for the work of ministry and for the edifying of the body of Christ. Now note verse 16 in this passage, because here it says that every part must do its share, or the body cannot increase itself or edify itself in love. So each of us is a part of that body, and every one of us must do his or her share. And my share is whatever I'm capable of doing. That's my share. Because you see, in a congregation of this size, it wouldn't matter if you had 10 of the finest elders who ever lived, they still cannot do everything that needs to do in the congregation, and they can't do it without your help. This is strictly a cooperative team effort. That's the only way it will work. Six, the congregation should want elders to be strict. That's right. You want a weak-kneed person who has no nerve as an elder? Why? Why do you want a milksop instead of a strong person? Is he going to be able to convict, convince a gainsayer? Will he have the courage to do that? Will he have the courage to face a serious problem? You don't want a weak person in the eldership. You want a strong person. Because that's what's best for the church. You want him to see things. You want him to be alert. Would you hire someone to watch your company if you knew he was going to sleep all the time? You want an incompetent doctor operating on you? You want someone cleaning your clothing who isn't watching what he's doing? We don't need incompetence anywhere. Least of all, should we ever want it in the eldership. You don't want a man as an elder that you can manipulate. You don't want a man as an elder that you can influence. You want a man who will stand on what is right, whether you're with him or not. He has to stand on what is right, or he is of no use to the congregation. So don't ever desire an elder to be weak, to be easily influenced, to be sympathetic to every whim that members have. What you are actually doing is wishing for the destruction of the congregation. So we should figuratively applaud when our elders take a strong stand. We should congratulate them for doing it. We should admire them for doing it. Because when you see them take a strong stand, you know you have a protector. You have someone looking over you who will do it, who isn't afraid to do it. That's a comfort. That's a consolation that we sometimes need. But you see, that depends entirely upon us. We should never select a person to be an elder that doesn't have the courage of his commitments, because he's going to let us all down if that's the kind of person we select. So we have to examine our own thinking in the matter. I mean, really examine our own thinking. And don't think of just what's best for you. Think of what's best for everyone. What's best for God's body. That should be our prime consideration. You don't want the church to weaken. Neither does he. You don't want it to waste away in apathy. Neither does he. So don't help it waste away. Don't help it grow weak. Do everything you can to make it strong. Because you have just as much at stake here as he has, in a sense. Your soul's salvation is on the line, just as his is. And it's just as vital for you to do what will save you as it is for him to do what it will save him. Let me give you a quick example of an elder who was very badly treated by a congregation. I won't mention where or who, but I never met any better man than this. He was true blue all the way through, willing to do anything for the church. At that time, we didn't have gas and oil furnaces, just wood stoves. He would come to the building at 6 a.m. every Sunday morning, build a roaring fire and a big stove that was up front, kind of in the middle. And he would come again at 8 and replenish the wood supply in the stove to make sure that it stayed good and warm in the building. I don't know that anyone ever thanked him for it. I don't know that anyone ever appreciated it, because in this congregation we had a group of complaining, griping, fussing people who had a good man but didn't understand him, didn't appreciate him, never said thank you, just complained and griped and found fault. They didn't like the way he dressed, because once in a while he might have a handkerchief hanging out of his rear pocket. Once in a while he might come into the building in the winter time and his sock might be, his long underwear might still be showing just a little bit. One of his socks might be down just a little. He's always clean, but not especially a good dresser. Wasn't especially concerned about appearances. Very well-read man in the Bible. Very solid. Very understanding. He took care of the contribution himself because everybody else was too lazy to do it. So he looked after practically everything in that congregation, he and his fellow elders. Now this man, because he was not what you would call a fashion figure, because he did not appear to be a highly educated, highly polished man in the community. Oh, incidentally, he gave as much as all the members combined too. He had 3 farms, and he was a very generous man in his giving to the church, both in his service and with his money. Very hospitable, very common man, down to earth. He just wasn't quite fancy enough for some of the people there. So they undertook to find a reason to get rid of him. And the reason they found was a concocted lie. On Sunday, at that time, there were no deposit possibilities with banks. You couldn't go to the bank until Monday. They didn't stay open at night, you see. You had one bank in the community, and it was 9 to 3. That was it. Well, there was a holiday on the following Monday in this particular week when this event happened. He had a number of people helping him put up hay. He was a farmer himself. And in order to make change, he put in a $50 bill and got $50 worth of change from what had been given him as the collection that week to put in the bank, in order to pay his hands, because at that time it was customary to pay hands at the close of each day. You didn't do it by the week or the month, you paid them daily. That was expected. Well, one of those was one of those gripey members of the church. And so the accusation was made totally falsely, and it was knowledgeably told falsely, that he was using the money in the contribution to pay his hands. And because the members of the church were willing to believe anything bad that anybody said, they all swallowed this like a fish swallows a hungry worm, and they all insisted that he resign. Well, under the circumstances, he did. But he became an elder in another congregation nearby. I had the privilege of working under that man, one of the finest I've ever known. Now that was a shame and a disgrace, and a number of people are going to answer for that, just as sure as you live. I hope that never happens again in the Brotherhood. And if I see even a hint of anything in that direction, I should do everything in my power to stop it right there. And enough said, I think. Paul said, this is point number 8, I do not frustrate the grace of God. He meant, I don't set it aside. I don't void or negate it. I don't destroy its influence. I don't downplay it. In other words, he said, I would never downplay or doubt the role of the grace of God in my salvation. I would never deny that, or in any way would I try to say that that's not important. Now, congregations can severely or just almost totally frustrate, hamper the work of elders. And the most common way they do it is just by simply ignoring what he says and asks. Suppose he announces that a particular member would much appreciate visitors. No one responds. He might ask members to sign a worksheet because the building needs some extra cleaning and we're going to have a meeting in a week or so and this would be beneficial. One or two people come. Or the elders might stress the necessity of attending all services of the church with equal consistency. But the same persons continue to miss Sunday nights and Wednesday nights and don't come to special meetings. So we can frustrate. We can hamper his work by just simply ignoring what he says and asks. Now, wouldn't it be strange if a flock of sheep all came to be fed on a certain morning and then didn't come again for the rest of the week when they need feeding daily? Wouldn't that be strange? But sheep are smarter than that. They're smarter than that. As a matter of fact, they all mass outside the corral sometime before feeding time. Well, we come to be fed. Are you going to tell me that one feeding a week is sufficient? A sheep would die. And I don't think we fare very well either. Now, we're smarter than sheep, or are we? Are we? They don't miss a meal. Though we miss a lot of them, don't we, some of us? And we think it doesn't matter. We're dead wrong because it weakens us spiritually just as it would weaken that sheep physically to miss being fed. Human beings very frequently just don't think, I believe. We more or less go through life rather blindly, not even thinking about what we're doing sometimes. And maybe that's the reason that we are as neglectful in some cases as we are. But you know, people who are neglectful are very frail spiritually. They're not strong. They can't perform very well, and they very probably will not survive if they don't change their behavior. Now, I have been told all my life, and I believe it, that learning is a change of behavior. Learning is not just understanding something. If I really know it, I respond in some way. And I'm speaking of things that I learn about how I should live, how I should perform, how I should treat other people, how I should talk. If I learn to pray, really learn, that means I pray a good deal. Because learning causes my behavior to adjust accordingly. Now, if you say you have learned that the church is important, your behavior will demonstrate that. But some people seem not to learn. Apparently, their behavior proves it. Now, an elder doesn't have to do all the feeding personally. Just like in a large flock, a shepherd will have others who help him do the feeding. An elder needs help in feeding his flock. This is the reason each of us must develop our talents, our abilities to the utmost. We must help him feed this flock. Now, if he wants to try a supplement, perhaps, to add to the feed that the flock has been getting, perhaps he will ask someone from the outside to come in and instruct the flock for a period of time. Because what this does, although we're all dealing with the same food, we get the food from the same source, but our own personal touch very often will make that a little more palatable, make it just a little bit more attractive.